The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 4 podcast.
And we welcome you back to the final hour of the program. And as a young teenager growing up in Memphis, I started reading our next guest and said, you know what, man, do I want to be like this guy? So I followed him about 10 years later as the sports editor of the school paper. And that's when it all fell apart. Woody Page went off to become a big-time columnist and then one of ESPN's first converts from the sports writing world. You've seen him around on the Round the Horn for about 4,000 years. And he has now graced us with his presence. The one and only Woody Page joins the program. Woody, good afternoon. How are you?
Well, I just saw somebody about 5 minutes ago, and they said, didn't you used to be Woody Page?
Well, that's a good feeling, isn't it?
Yeah, they said the same thing. They said, oh, yeah, I used to watch you on the Round the Horn. I said, I haven't died.
could be an indicator of the show, though, maybe more than you.
It's nice of you to invite me on your worldwide leader kind of top show about the SEC. I am so old, Paul. When you're talking about I'll be 75 in June. I saw Tennessee in its final year of running the single wing offense.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I may have told you this once before, Woody, but I think it was late in my career at UT. I think it was Haywood Harris or Bud Ford. I can't remember which one. He said, you know, it took us 10 years to get over Woody Page as a sports editor of the school paper. But Feinbaum, you have totally broken and burned down the building. We're right back to where we were when Woody was here. So that was the moment that I knew I had to chase you around the world.
Yeah, when I was there, they said, we hope there's never anybody like you. I actually was editor of the UT Daily Beacon for about a year and a half, and the head of the what was then journalism department, now College of Communication, called me in and said I was the most incorrigible student. And I said, in the history of your class? And he said, no, in the history of the University of Tennessee. And so I guess that's a so you're, I'll tell you a very quick story. Peyton Manning and I have known each other since he was a little kid because I covered Archie, his father. And Archie and I have always been very close. And Peyton came to me the year he retired, and he said, I understand you just got the distinguished Tennessee Alumni Award, the most prestigious award. And I said, yeah, thank you. I understand you got it last year. He said, yeah, I'm giving Matt back. If they're giving it, you
know, that is pretty funny.
Yeah, it's a very true story that he said, I'm giving mine back. So he majored in speech communication. I majored in trying to learn how to speak English because I grew up in Memphis, Tennessee, and people on Around the Horn still say, we don't quite understand you. So my accent has gone. Yours has gone away. Mine has not. So,
well, How long have you? I'm curious about your ESPN career because I know your newspaper career, but I mean you've pretty much done everything at ESPN, haven't you?
Yeah, someone wrote me recently because I did a morning show that was supposedly their version of the Today or Good Morning America. It was called Cold Pizza.
Right.
And I did that for a few years, and I will tell you that when I die, my tombstone will say the only person that has worked on TV shows with Jay Mariotti, Skip Bayless, and Stephen A. Smith. And I don't know whether that's a positive or a real negative in my life. Yeah, I did Sports Center when I was in New York. I was doing a show called Dream Job that was also ESPN's version of American Idol or something like that. And I did First and 10 with Skip Bayless after we did Cold Pizza, and I did First Take. I was the first, which is still on ESPN, so that worked out well. And they had me doing a 15-minute Disney Kids Channel show. They felt like, I think, Paul, that kids that were 6 to 8 years old could understand what I was saying about sports, because we were in the same kind of level of intelligence at that time. So I've done I started with ESPN Classics, and they used to do, and I'm sure you and a lot of your listeners will remember, they used to do like once a week an hour-long bio of people in sports. And they came and interviewed me and gave me $250 and said, we want to ask you about some athletes, and you tell a story. And I said, sure, yeah, I'll do that. And I was there for 8 hours, and they would just throw names at me, and they'd go, Secretariat. And I said, really? You want to say? And then they said, Ted Williams. I said, I'm not that old. I said, I remember him as a kid. And they went through all that, and they said, good job. We'd like for you to do it again. I said, not for $250. but that's how it really started. And Pardon Interruption came on the air in about 2002 and was very successful. And I think they decided that sports writers could actually talk about sports on television because of Tony and Michael doing so well. And I met with the president and vice president of ESPN at the Super Bowl, and they said, we're going to start a new show, a companion to Pardon Interruption, and we want you to be kind of our centerpiece. And I said, what are you talking about? He said, well, it's going to be kind of like Hollywood Squares, and you'll be Paul Lynn the Block. And I said, what are you talking about? And I actually turned it down because I didn't want to commit 5 days a week to doing this show. And I didn't even realize at the time it would take, people don't realize it, it takes us about 6 hours to do a half-hour show. And I thought when I first took the job, and I could do it from Denver, that it would be a half hour, like coming on your show today, that you know, it'd be a half hour, then you go away. And it ended up not only being about 18 and a half years ago, but that it's turned out to be probably the most fun I've ever done in my life, because we just did the show a couple of hours ago, and we just laughed through the entire time we were doing it.
I want to go back later in a few minutes to your sports writing career, but here you are, really one of the most successful and highest paid sports writers in the country, and there is notoriety and prestige, and then you start doing a game show on ESPN, and I'm guessing I'm going to be correct about this. Your fame blew up walking down the streets of anywhere, didn't it?
Particularly when I was in New York for several years, because Around the Horn's first, it's on about 7 or 8 times a day now, but it when it started and I'd be in New York, it came on in prime time basically there, and it was difficult to walk around. That was surprising to me. I mean, I realized, as you did when we were at the University of Tennessee at different times, that people read the newspaper every day. The Daily Beacon was a daily newspaper, and I wrote columns for it, and I wrote both general columns and sports columns, and I'd walk into one of those auditorium classrooms, and everybody would be reading the column and laughing because I wrote funny kind of stuff, and I thought, you know, maybe this works out for me, that I can do this. But I once asked Dikembe Mutombo, when he was growing up in Africa, did he dream of playing in the NBA? And he laughed at me in about 7 different languages, because he speaks 7 different languages. And anybody that's seen the Geico commercials, they know exactly how Dikembe goes, not in my house. And I said, did you dream of playing in the NBA? He said, I couldn't dream beyond the end of the dirt road, meaning that he had no understanding or belief about playing pro basketball. And that's kind of growing up in the South, as you and I did. The only dream I had is that I could be a sports writer for the Memphis Commercial Appeal. That was the only dream that I could possibly have in life, because there was no television. There was no sports talk radio. And I actually started doing sports talk radio in Memphis. A station called me and said, you know, would you talk about sports? And I said, do what? Okay, for 5 minutes. So I couldn't dream of it, and I certainly couldn't dream of ESPN, and I certainly couldn't dream that a kid that grew up in Lauderdale Courts, about two doors from Elvis Presley, and for people who don't know Memphis, and you obviously know as much about it as I do, but where I was born and raised in government housing, I played on a piece of ground that later became St. Jude Hospital. And my parents lived there. The Presleys lived there. A lot of people from, my father was from Mississippi, and you couldn't live there unless you made less than $30 a month. And my dad made $1 a day. And I felt like early on that I wanted to be a writer. And that was really based on, and I'm sure it is for you, that there were so many great novelists, great fiction and nonfiction writers that came out of the South, and I don't know whether it was because of the hardscrabble or because there was nothing else we could do except pick cotton, and that's the truth. My dad picked cotton as a kid and took me down there, and I knew I didn't want to pick cotton for a living. And so, you know, all I could dream about was someday I wanted to be a writer like, say, somebody like Tennessee Williams, somebody of that,
sure,
that ilk. And so this has all been a surprise to me, and still is, but I've been doing it since I was a kid in high school. I worked for the White Haven Press.
I remember that. Hey, Woody, don't hold the thought. I want to come back and go back to those days in our remaining moments. Woody Page is with us, and I almost said Woody Hayes. It sounds similar, but Woody's career is still going. We will take a short break, come back, and continue our conversation with the legendary Woodrow Page.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be. Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand-name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free, no insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Paul. That's hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
And we welcome you back. Woody Page is our guest for a few more minutes. And Woody, what I've always found so remarkable about your career, a lot of us followed you and wrote, and then we moved on. You've never stopped writing, though. You were at the Denver paper for 30-some-odd years. You continue to write. I'm really curious about that and why you have stuck to your craft after so many years.
That's kind of funny because I almost left at ESPN at some point because I was still writing when I was in New York, and I got an offer to write, and I still write for two newspapers in Colorado, the Denver Gazette and the Colorado Springs Gazette, because I think I will die writing a column because I enjoy writing it. I told you that a lot of guys have moved on. And I remember Dan Patrick saying to me many, many years ago, he said, "Welcome to the dark side. You're no longer on the light side." And I said, "I'll always be on the light side," meaning writing. But I started doing it when I was in junior high school, basically, and I've never lost my love for and affection about writing. And every time I speak at a lot of colleges and in Zoom conferences to high schools, and I tell them that every time I sit down to write, I say to myself, have fun. And that's my mantra, basically, about my career. And I would say that to anybody listening that's a young person wanting to get into some field, if it includes communications, that you just go in with the attitude that you're going to be passionate about it and have fun and work hard at it, and it works out. Because I told students at Tennessee when I go back, I said, take a look at me. I've got no talent. Imagine what you could do with all the talent you have. And it's kind of funny. You said you grew up wanting to be Woody Page. When I was about 55, I wanted to be Paul. So we kind of switched roles. But I never wanted to give up writing because I enjoy it so much. I love the English language. And I hate people that don't use it properly and don't really have a fondness for it. And so that love never left me. And when I was in high school, I was sports editor of the Whitehaven Press, which was a weekly newspaper in the suburbs of Memphis, and had a circulation of about 60,000. And I really kind of honed my craft there before I went off to school at the University of Tennessee. I have a real quick story for you that you don't know.
Sure.
And this will sum up something you don't know about me, and most people don't. So I used to rip on the coach at that. By the way, for people who don't know, my love is SEC football. I grew up, and my dad, when I was a year and a half old, took me to Old Crum Stadium in Memphis to see Ole Miss play Tennessee. I was a year and a half old, and I don't remember it, but my dad would tell me about it. There was snow, and that was the beginning of falling in love with college football, specifically the SEC. So no matter that I've been away from the SEC for about 45 years, that I still tell people in other parts of the country, this is not college football. Let me tell you about college football. I've covered the Big 12. I've covered the Big 8. I've covered Nebraska football. And they talk about it, and I go, yeah, this is nothing like that. Anyway, when I was in college, I started ripping on I was objective then. I ripped on Ray Mears, who was the Tennessee basketball coach, because he couldn't beat Kentucky. And so he called me one day and said, I want you to come to my office. And so I went over, and that's where you know that Haywood and Bud Ford and the SIDs in the old arena. And I went there, and he said, you rip on me all the time. You don't really know me as a coach. I want you to play in the orange and white game. Get yourself in shape. He said, I know you've played some basketball. And he said, get yourself in shape. Sports Illustrated has asked us to play on 12-foot goals. There had been talk about then Lou Alcindor and others dominating the game, maybe raising the goals. And I said, are you crazy? And he said, yes, I am, but I'm going to let you play. So I actually played for like 5 minutes in the orange and white inter-squad game. People are familiar with it, every school that you go to. And I got one rebound and 2 points. And I scored a goal on a 12-foot goal. The only game in college basketball history, even though it was an inter-squad game, that was played with a 12-foot goal. And so afterward, Ray Mears said, I guess now you can stop ripping me. And I said, yeah, you should have played me about 15 minutes. That's really where I got into the first time that I got criticizing coaches. Because I just assumed the coaches knew more than I did if they were coaches, and I found out that I felt like I knew as much as the coaches did, and so it's kind of followed me my entire career. So anyway, I think that you and I share something that there's only about three of us that ever came out of the School of Journalism in Tennessee that ever amounted to anything. And I'm not sure about myself, but I've always had great respect for you and for all the people down there in SEC country. And my good friend, Buddy Martin, who I know is a good friend of yours,
oh, sure,
is listening today. And people ask Buddy the same question. Why do you continue to write? Because we love it. We grew up with it. And I'll never leave it, no matter whatever TV career. And I was doing about four programs a day for ESPN for quite a while. And I still never gave up writing because I just think the great sports writers, and you know this, that came out of the South, I mean, from Atlanta, and I'll include those Dallas writers, that they were just incredible. And writers in Memphis that I grew up loving, and in Florida, Georgia, Alabama, you know that, all of the great writers in the South, and they sort of paved the way for all of us to try and have fun with the language, but be serious enough about what we were doing, particularly covering it. SEC football gave us such a great canvas for writing about sports. And I also covered for quite a while civil rights and the aftermath of the assassination of Dr. King in the South. So I think I learned about writing from different aspects of that, too. So
would he be,
I still do it, and I will.
Before you go, I want to close on a serious note, because so many young people on campuses, high school, they pay attention to this stuff. And for someone who has done it all, and I really mean that, what would you tell young people, high school, college, who want to go into this profession but maybe don't really understand what they're getting into?
I do talk to them on a regular basis. I've just given two lectures at colleges, and I said the same thing to both those lectures, and I say it to all young people, is 15 years ago, I didn't know anything about podcasts. They didn't exist. There was not sports writers talking on television 20 years ago. Whatever it is they want to do in the world of sports, it's not going to be the same 5 years from now. So get in front of it. And when I say get in front of it, streaming television, talk shows for that, YouTube channels. I think that the young people today who actually say, what is the next step going to be in sports communication? Is it going to be a form of social media? I mean, will it be a form of sports Netflix? Whatever it might be, but that's the way I would look at it, because when I was young and when you were young, our avenues were strictly really sports writing for newspapers. Well, that no longer really exists. So I think it's important for everybody, and I would say anybody that wants to, and I get, as you do, I get thousands of emails a month saying, I want to get into the business. Well, think of what it is that it's going to next be. I won't be around for it, and I don't mean I'm going to die right away, but I won't be a part of the next. I was parts of sports talk radio, initiating that when there was a guy named Pete Franklin in Cleveland,
sure,
that I listened to when I was young. And people won't remember him, but he was really the godfather of sports talk radio. And I think sports talk radio, I've been trying to be, I want to be a part of everything. Sports talk radio, I did TV. I've done TV forever. I did TV talk. I did a podcast. I've done YouTube game shows. I've done a little bit of everything. The more you can learn, the more you do, the more apt you are to be able to do it with some sort of talent. The only ability I have is availability. I've always been available. So no talent, but I have great respect for you, and it's very nice of you to occasionally invite me on every couple of years. And maybe my dream would be that you and I actually do a show together in person sometime.
Oh, I would love it. Woody, I don't want to gush here, but I can't thank you enough. This has been just a thrill for me as a host, but personally, just an amazing experience to be able to sit and listen to you, but mostly to let the audience know a little bit more about you. Please come back, and I do hope to see you very soon.
Yeah, and I give all, I said earlier, real quickly, my father grew up in Tupelo, Mississippi. He was a diabetic, and he had no education. My mother and he married when they were teenagers, and they had more influence on my life. I taught myself how to type when I was in the fifth grade, and they bought me a typewriter. And so I'd say to everyone, the most important thing is idolize your parents. because they're the ones that are going to be more responsible for what you become in your life. And I've lost both of them, and I miss them, but you and I wouldn't be talking, and I wouldn't have gone to be the first one in my family to go to college if it hadn't been because of their love and their hard effort. So I want to salute them, and I certainly want to salute you, because I thought really I was going to be the most incorrigible person in the history of the University of Tennessee, and then along came you. So thank you for all records are made to be broken, and you did.
Woody, I'm honored that you recognize me in that position. Hey, thank you so much. You be well, and we will definitely do this again in person. And,
sure. And all of my friends in the South, I love you. I love SEC football, and someday I'm going to come back and live in Natchez, Mississippi.
It's a nice place. Hey, thank you, Woody. We are what a just incredible 30 minutes that was. I can't imagine ever topping it, but we will try. Let's take a break. We have to hit the break here later than usual, but we'll get over it. Kyle Peterson on the huge weekend in SEC baseball.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-hour energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5hourenergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5hourenergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And we want to jump on our next conversation quickly because Kyle Peterson has a game to do at the top of the hour. And we went a little bit long with Woody. But Kyle, thanks so much. And it's almost cliche to say the same thing every time we talk to you about the SEC. But this weekend really feels special. And I know you're about to jump on board with the Ole Miss-Mississippi State game. Good afternoon. And what are you looking forward to the most tonight?
Paul, good to talk to you, man. It'll be fun. I mean, the first time that Vanderbilt and Tennessee have ever met when they're both in the top five, and obviously Tennessee, Vanderbilt's used to being in this spot. It's been a while for Tennessee, and it's been a gradual progressive buildup since Tony Vitello got there. And they got a chance to be a national seed, and if you win a weekend series against Vanderbilt this weekend, you put yourself in a really good spot. So I would assume that Knoxville will be hopping, and then ours is going to be a blast. I mean, anytime it's Ole Miss, Mississippi State, it's always going to be good. It looks like they will pack it just as they did in Oxford last weekend. So this is one that I'm sad we can't see in person, but I'm glad that everybody else can see it because I think the environment's going to be unbelievable.
And I'm curious because we saw some of that last week I think it was last week in Oxford, but you've been in so many of these ballparks when it feels like there's nothing else in the world that matters. How does that affect the game?
Well, I think it affects everything. I think it affects the prep. I mean, even in talking to Mike Bianco and Chris Lemonis this weekend, the head coach for Ole Miss and Mississippi State both, they talk about talking to their team, just about this is the reality of the rivalry. And part of it was, because a lot of the kids that are going to play in this game haven't played in this game before. I mean, if you're in your first or second year at either one of those schools, you haven't been in this situation. So I think some of it was just to make sure that they were aware. It's going to be a little bit different tonight. And you know, don't be surprised by the environment. Mike Bianco was laughing with us this week and said, you know, we'd go from Oxford to where they throw beers up in the air when we hit home runs to right field to Starkville when they throw beers at us when we hit home runs. So it's to each their own, but I do know that both have talked about just making sure that their guys are just aware of the setting that they're going to walk into, which is one of the best settings in college baseball.
talking to Kyle Peterson on the call for Ole Miss and State tonight. I want to go back to Vandy and Tennessee for a second, because it has to be frustrating when you're not part of this conversation in the SEC. And you mentioned the change. How do you turn a culture around like we've seen at Tennessee, like we've seen at a lot of places?
Well, you need players first. I mean, it's, you know, the greatest coaches in the world are generally either pretty darn good recruiters or they got one next to them. So I think that's first and foremost, is you need the dudes, and Tennessee's starting to get more of those guys. And they're playing a style that I think is reminiscent of what we're used to seeing SEC baseball played, where there's a little bit more power. You know, there was a period of time where Tennessee resembled more of a West Coast team, and that's a hard style to play in the SEC when you're playing week in and week out. So I think it's two things. One is you got to make sure you get the right guys there, and they're getting more of the right guys there. And then the second is playing a style that fits the league, and they're back to playing that style. Tony Vitello knows how to recruit. I mean, he recruited when he was at TCU. He recruited when he was at Arkansas. He knows the league. Clearly, he's starting to get guys in there. And you would assume that when it's Vanderbilt and Tennessee, that some of the guys on that field today were recruited by both. So that always creates a little bit of a different dynamic in and of itself.
Kyle, you look at the national rankings every week, and you know sometimes it gets jumbled up a little bit, but it's still mainly the same schools. And as you evaluate, as you do these games, it seems like we spent a lot of time talking about the pitching staff for Vanderbilt. That's not a new story, but is there, can you see a lot of separation, or is there a lot of separation among these top four or five SEC schools who are at the top of the rankings?
I don't know that there is a lot of separation. When Vanderbilt's healthy, I think they're probably the most complete. You know, clearly when you go rock or lighter on the weekend, you're going to match up with anybody. But the reality is, you know, Ole Miss is going to throw two arms out there. Gunnar Hoglund tonight's going to be a first-rounder this year. And Doug Nikhazy has been outstanding the whole year. Do they have the fanfare that Kumar and Jack Leiter do? No. But can they go head-to-head with them? Yeah. I mean, Georgia went head-to-head with them last week, and, you know, I wasn't expecting Georgia to go into Nashville and take two out of three and hit three. Kumar Rocker had given up two home runs in 157 innings. He gave up three against Georgia. And so anything can happen over the course of the weekend. But as far as discernible differences between, you know, Arkansas, Vanderbilt, Mississippi State, Tennessee, Ole Miss, those that are in the top, I think you can throw Florida in the mix. You know, Florida hasn't played their best baseball, but Florida's still loaded with talent. It's still the same talent that was the unanimous number one team to start the country. They're just starting to figure themselves out now. So there's six or seven in the league that you could look at that all have a legitimate argument and chance to get to Omaha.
I know you have a game, so we will let you rest your voice. We really appreciate you dropping by here to preview what's going to be an amazing weekend. We will definitely be watching your call on the game tonight. Thank you, Kyle. Come back soon.
Always, man. Thanks for caring about college baseball, Paul.
You got it. What an amazing conversation with Kyle. We'll continue our conversations with him. But what a night this is going to be. And I don't mean to take away from – there's so many other good games, but certainly he'll be doing the game in Starkville, and everybody is fired up about that one. We'll take a break. Much more to come.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Well, we made it to the end of the week. Appreciate you being a part of the show. We will see you on Monday.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.